because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross. And
this is Rewind, the first Rewind of 2016. J.R., Happy New Year, man.
Same to you.
But in the Capitol, here's what intrigues me. There were like 30, 35 committee meetings.
Yes.
They held more than 100 bills. The agenda alone of the Senate Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, public hearings on 12 bills. These are the notices, part of them for this week. What the heck's going on up? Why the traffic jam?
It's end of the year rush. So I mean, we've seen this every session pretty much. You have now a narrow window between now and either the end of February or 5th of March, somewhere around there, or April, I'm sorry, to get everything done, and then you're gone for the rest of the year. And so you have, in the one House, in the Assembly, Robin Voss has said several times, dumb it in February and get off the campaign trail. Or as Scott Fitzgerald said, well, we're here till April 5th, technically, so we may come back, depending, though, what the Assembly will do. Because if the Assembly goes home and says we're done, you can only pass Assembly bills. You can pass Senate bills if you want to on April 5th, but nobody will do anything with them. So there's this time crunch. You've got to get something done.
But I also think some of these legislators are really seeking public hearings so they can say, well, you know, I didn't get this bill passed, but I got a public hearing, and I'll get it a little bit further than the next time.
Oh, yeah.
Agree?
Lay the foundation for next session. A lot of this stuff. I mean, there are a lot of bills. There are also a lot of bills being thrown out there right now that are not going with the session, let's be honest.
Right.
There are a number of them that are controversial that leadership doesn't want to go anywhere with the session. They want to get out of town where they deal with this stuff.
They do.
But it might come back next session, depending on what's the makeup in both houses. You know, does there need change? What's leadership look like? What's the environment look like? So this is kind of a foundational period as well for, let's see, it'll be 2017-18.
But don't you think they both, legislative leaders, both want to get out of here by March 1? The sooner the better?
Yeah, you know, Fitzgerald, when I've talked to him, has been more open to stick around longer. But his caucus sometimes takes more time to kind of reach resolution on things.
They are the deliberative body.
Yeah, so that might be part of it. But yeah, I think they are looking at this election year. You know, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. Let's get home and raise money, get signatures down, and start campaigning for November.
Meanwhile, we're getting public hearings on bills, state aid to local fairs, and regulation of horse racing. Mm-hmm. Is that high on your agenda?
No, but it shows you if you're in the majority,
yep,
and you can get your caucus on board, you can pass almost anything in this House.
Well, how about Senate Bill 330, regulating the sale of homemade baked goods and homemade canned goods?
That is important to somebody.
It's introduced by Senator Harsar.
That is important to somebody somewhere, and there is some reason. There was some potluck, or, you know, we've done this story before. There was some potluck that somebody had a problem with the health inspector, and it results in a bill, you know. So,
kombucha sale. Anyway, yes. Okay. Topic two. We both interviewed the governor yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him some political questions, and you got him to make news on some other issues. But the thing that strikes me is, let's hear the governor as he says, his term is highly probable that Donald Trump's going to be the Republican presidential nominee. So let's take a few seconds and listen to that.
There's a high probability, but as you know, Rudy Giuliani was ahead in the polls, Howard Dean was the poll, heck, Hillary Clinton was ahead in the polls. You know, when people are ahead in the polls, it's one thing. When they actually have to vote, it's something very different. But to me, as I said on the stage in Cleveland, I'll support whoever the nominee is, because whoever is in the running right now on the Republican side is infinitely better for this country than Hillary Clinton.
Now, are you surprised that the governor used the term highly probable that Trump's going to be the nominee? Because here's a governor in September when he got out of the presidential race who said, I'm getting out so others can get out so we can make sure Donald Trump isn't the nominee.
Have a conservative alternative.
Yes, thank you.
Trump. Well, the field's still fractured. So as I sit here right now, there hasn't been a narrowing the field down to 2, 3, 4 people. There is a way to coalesce around somebody besides Trump. Now, what's interesting to watch, though, is that what's going to happen, we're less than a month away from Iowa,
mm-hmm,
and then not long after that, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
You may see a narrowing of the field after that, and what happens at dynamic then. Donald Trump, for all his poll numbers, starts approving people show up in Iowa.
That's true.
A month from now, in the, you know, late at night or late
that's
in the evening.
That's a ground game. That's an organizational
late in the
game.
Evening in the cold,
yep.
Show up and vote for him. New Hampshire, I saw somebody tweeting yesterday that people are going to be conceding New Hampshire to Trump but trying to vie for second place, like a Christie, a Kasich. They need a strong showing in New Hampshire to be the establishment type candidate, a Jeb Bush. They'll propel them forward to Nevada and South Carolina. So there's still an opportunity to win the field, but if it remains fractured, it's easier for Trump to kind of break through and be that 30% guy and still get enough delegates to be the the front runner.
I also asked Walker, if Trump is a nominee, would you support him? And he said, I made a promise during the debate in Cleveland to support the Republican nominee. I'm going to stick by that. I also said, have you decided to endorse before our April 5th primary? He said, no, I really haven't made up my mind.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's too early for him. I mean, if you want to have the biggest bang for your buck, do it right for the primary. You know, have it where you see somebody who has momentum or you can make a difference, then do it before they vote in Wisconsin. That would really carry more weight for Walker than saying it now in early January before he goes to the polls in Iowa. And you don't want to bet on the wrong horse and have that horse be gone by the time April, whatever, 5th rolls around.
He also said in the course of our interview, he said, well, I may not want to seek a fourth term, but let's not dwell on that. He did, though, as he told you, he's now in a listening mode, going around the state, listening. And when pressed on his top priority, he said it's workforce readiness, and he's interested in making it easier. Well, some major changes in how K-12, our high schools, and our VocTech and the UW system work together. So let's hear him talk about that.
How does high school align into the technical college system for those who choose those professions? How does it move? I mean, part of a potential three-year degree program might be high school seniors taking more course options where they get credit for graduation and credit for a college degree.
He's interested in high school students being able to earn credits both towards their high school diploma and towards a UW degree. He's interested in guaranteeing his term in that interview that you could get in 3 years a UW system degree, excuse me, which would lower your student debt, things like that. Did he say anything new on workforce readiness in your interview?
Just that it continues to be a priority for him. Now, he's been talking about this for quite a while now, even in 2014.
The 2010 campaign, 250,000 new private sector jobs.
And now it's about trying to get people into those jobs that are open. He talks a lot about the 90-some thousand, whatever it is now, jobs that are open in Wisconsin on the state website and not being able to get people into them. So he describes it as everything he's doing is trying to get people prepared, whether it's transitional job programs, whether it's the drug screening that he's have for safety net programs now, that's to get people into jobs. Mm-hmm. He keeps his analogy to sports analogy of getting people off the sidelines and into the game. So he's looking at that. That's the new threat or the language you'll hear from Walker about job preparedness kind of going forward.
But in your interview, I want to come in here. You got him to make some real news. I was surprised when he told you that he is still against any increase in the gas tax or the motor vehicle registration fee. But how can that be when we just borrowed $850 million? Legislators are upset. Your story quoted Luther Olson. Mm-hmm. So I was really surprised that he's still drawing that line in the sand. If you raise gas tax or vehicle registration fees, you have to cut elsewhere.
Oh, I wasn't surprised by that at all. That's Walker. I mean, that's Walker's MO, if you will, that he drew a line. He's not going to back away from it on something like this, especially taxes. Now, what he's saying is that, okay, if I'm not going to approve a tax hike or a fee increase without offsetting a reduction somewhere else, and you guys, lawmakers, aren't going to borrow money, then we'll spend less on roads. It might be a little warning of, look, these are alternatives. We're not going to do revenue uppers. You don't want to borrow, then expect your projects to be delayed because the zoo should be mostly finished, I think, by the time the next budget rolls around, or some final legs.
But we're not addressing the north-south part of the zoo. That was held
all
in,
those things.
That's on hiatus.
So, but it could be a warning of, look, work with me here on the borrowing piece of it, because you know he made the argument before, overall bonding is lower in this budget than it has been in years because it's really a vertical borrowing budget for buildings, doing it on roads. Maybe it's part of the thrust of, well, look, work with me. Let's go, and you know, borrowing's not a bad thing. We're talking about long-term construction projects. So it was interesting, but Republicans, the rub for them is, okay, you don't like the borrowing. How are you going to confront Governor Walker about a fee increase or a tax increase? So you're going to joint finance, pass a tax hike, gas tax hike, that you have to get through your caucuses. Because remember, even though members on finance, a majority of them have told me they support a gas tax hike, I don't know the rank and file in either caucus is ready for that step. So get it through the legislature first, and then Governor Walker vetoes it. What are you going to do?
Right.
You going to override him?
Yeah.
Try? That would be a fight I'm not sure they're ready to take on just yet.
I don't think that's a reasonable scenario. But you also asked him a question I didn't have a chance to ask. You ask him whether he still has confidence in Corrections Secretary Ed Wall in light of the Lincoln Hills problem. What did he tell you?
He basically said he's doing what people would expect him to do in terms of addressing these things. He defended his actions. That it seems like what he was saying is, look, we didn't get all these details of what was going on because Department of Justice, remember, if I remember this correctly, The Department of Justice was notified about these issues in late 14, began an investigation, and was kind of, Wall didn't have all these details yet that we now have of what all was going on there. So this is a routine visit, like in August. There was a report about he's up there in August, but same time that the first, the John Doe was going on to look into these allegations of abuse, that they didn't have all the allegations in front of them. Once they did, they acted. So he never actually said, I still have confidence he will still be the Corrections Secretary going forward regardless, but he did say he's doing what people expect him to do in the situation and doing what we want him to do.
Which stops short of a ringing endorsement of our Corrections Secretary, right?
Yeah, it leaves a little wiggle room for sure.
Seems to be that perhaps, is it fair to say Wall's fate will depend on whatever that John Doe results in, and whether there's charges, and
how was he running it? You know, was he aware of these things, but did he not? All those unanswered questions that are out there, if you will, about that issue.
Okay, next topic. Well, every 4 years, the Presidential Preference Committee meets, and it decides who will be on the R&D ballot for our April 5th spring primary. Any surprises in the 12 Republicans and 3 Democrats, JR?
No. I mean, there were dozens, like 30 more people who asked to be on the ballot, but these are not like high-profile Democrats or Republicans. These are people who, like, are your neighbor who, you know, has
your
a
mailman.
Cause, has an axe to grind, if you will. Yeah, but so of the recognized candidates, no surprises at all. Interesting that this has been in place now since 1967. It's the brainchild of Fred Risser. So there's no filing fee, unlike other states where you have to pay to get on the ballot or collect signatures. All it is, this committee recognizes those who are have a viable campaign, who are recognized by national media as viable candidates. That's your basic standard. And what happens basically is Republicans say, here are ours. Dems say, here are ours. We all say, okay, let's go. Now, there are no third parties on that committee because they don't have ballot. They don't have standing, if you will. They haven't reached that threshold of 10% in the last election. But for the Republican Democrats, it's more like a formality, if you will, to meet every 4 years and do this.
Because U.S. politics and because you do this for a living, of the 12, how many do you think will withdraw? If you're going to withdraw, you must withdraw by January 26th. Are you willing to cancel out Mr. Gary Gilmore?
You know, I mean, he's the least most likely.
Okay.
But otherwise, they're all going to wait and see what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire. Why wouldn't you? I mean, you got this far. Unlike Walker dropping out in September, he realized that the path forward was not financially viable, if you will. He didn't have enough money to last through Iowa. These guys, they're 3.5-4 weeks out. Why not go through Iowa at least? Why not get to New Hampshire and try and see what happens? Because you could catch fire somewhere and get propelled on. Although a month in Iowa is an eternity, by the way, in politics.
Yes. And I apologize to Mr. Gilmore. What's his first name?
I mean, Jim Gilmore, I believe.
So I apologize, Mr. Jim, former Governor Gilmore. Okay, next subject. He's not running for president, but he still wants to be involved in the national dialogue. Governor Walker does. Mm-hmm. And so when he says to the Attorney General, research the executive orders to be issued by the president on background checks for gun sellers, it's really intriguing, and let's read what he said. President Obama is again disregarding the constitutional principles of separation of powers and exceeding his authority as chief executive. Just 3 more sentences. The Obama administration issued guidance creating uncertainty and fear of prosecution for law-abiding citizens who wish to exercise their right to sell firearms lawfully. I've asked the Attorney General to review this proposed rule language as soon as it is made available and take any and all legal measures available. Why?
It's a base issue. It's one that he cares
about.
He
doesn't have to pick this fight.
No, but I think Republicans nationally are looking to pick this fight with the president because he's picked it with them, in their minds at least. They think he has been on a streak, if you will, of overreach, doing a lot of things that he shouldn't be doing without approval from Congress. And this is one more example where they see EPA rules, for example. We're already part of that lawsuit, if I remember correctly.
We are joining that.
I would bet money somebody, some AG somewhere, will sue over this. I'm sure Wisconsin will join the lawsuit. I don't know if the state will take the lead on a lawsuit like that, but it is a kind of a core issue for the party, Republican Party, about executive overreach with this president in particular. And then, too, the Second Amendment rights. That's a core principle for them.
It still makes him a national player, right?
Okay. Absolutely.
But then, okay, so it's a feed the base move.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, let's take a minute to see. Let's parse the statement that our Attorney General issued in response to that. Public safety and preventing gun violence are among my chief concerns as Attorney General. We must, as a state, take steps to more effectively enforce our existing gun laws. It appears that President Obama once again intends to act unilaterally to restrict the Second Amendment and subvert the legislative process by issuing yet another executive order. Here's my question, JR. What is our Attorney General saying when he said, we must as a state take steps to more effectively enforce our existing gun laws?
Well, that's the old Republican argument of you don't need new gun laws, you need to force ones on the books. Felons who are caught with handguns, give them stiffer penalties. You know, give them the maximum sentence. You know, the people who are caught doing bad things, put them away. That's something you hear often from Republicans when it comes to gun debate.
Well, do you think Mr. Schimmel is responding because the governor told him? The other side of that is, had the governor not said, Attorney General, look into this, would he have gotten into it on his own?
Well, that's a good question. Now, the other thing is, I will be interested to see the language of these rules, because if I understand it, and I'm not a lawyer, but part of what's happening is they're adding definition or clarity, in their words, to these gun show. There's an exemption right now if private sales at gun shows that you don't have to go through background
check. If you sell me a gun,
if you're a hobbyist or a collector, but they're adding definition clarity again to who qualifies for that exemption that would catch more people, particularly at gun shows, who'd have to go through administer the background check. So how does that rule work? What's the language look like? That might be part of the decision-making process that that AG Schimmel goes through.
No. Okay, it was just interesting. Next subject. Well, it's official now. We have three candidates for the April Supreme Court election.
Claude Gilley dropped out late last year.
Yes. A Court of Appeals Judge Joanne Clappenberg, Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley, recently appointed by Governor Walker, Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Joe Donald. Talk to me, JR, about each of their potential constituencies.
Well, Bradley is going to be the conservative choice. I mean, that's pretty clear. Groups like Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce has already made clear that it is going to back her, for example. So she's probably going to have, most likely, also Republican support. The state GOP has not been shy about advocating help for her. So she looks like the conservative kind of right end of the spectrum candidate. Now, for Clappenberg and Donald, the question is, are they both going to vie for the progressive wing, the liberal wing of the electorate, or is Donald going to be kind of a more of a moderate candidate? Mm-hmm. At times, Donald has sounded like he's trying to kind of thread the needle through the middle, if you will, to pick up enough people in that middle piece and maybe a little bit on the either side to get through the primary. But who's going to get support between Clappenberg and Donald from the liberal groups? I reported about this last year, that the steering committee, if I remember correctly, wanted to endorse Donald, but then the executive council said, no, we're going to stay it out. Now, Clappenberg got the backing of most of AskMe people back when it was three separate councils back in 11, running against Prosser.
Yep.
That would have been a coup for one of them if they got that endorsement. That's not going to happen. Will any unions get involved in the primary? Will they sit it out and say, well, we'll see who gets through? If that happens and there's no real outside support, does Clappenberg get through because she saw his name ID? You still see plenty of green Clappenberg stickers from 2011 still on cars, especially around Madison. So she has name ID from that 11 race. Donald has a Milwaukee constituency. Will people turn out? Where will they turn out? Who's going to be at the polls come February? It's kind of an open question, if you will, what drives people come February, unless there is a concerted campaign by some groups, or one gets on TV, or does radio, or can build a statewide network. Let's be honest. Supreme Court candidates don't usually build really good statewide networks in February of the election. It's more driven by outside groups.
The state Republican Party is trying to help Justice Bradley with her fundraising. Do you see any similar linkage or synergy with the state Democratic Party for Clappenberg?
At this point in this race, no, but it was pretty clear.
I didn't think so either.
It was pretty clear in 11 that Democrats were behind Clappenberg. I mean, there was no, like, let's be honest. Our Supreme Court candidates like to think that they're nonpartisan. They're not.
No.
You know, that's not really
biggest
realistic.
Misnomer, huge misnomer.
I do get the impression, though, that people still like, if you will, if they appear nonpartisan on the top. So if you're blatantly partisan, they might hold that against you a little bit. But otherwise, no, it's no secret that who'll be behind whom come April.
Well, and let's just, the dates for the primary elections, February 16th, and the general election, of course, is April 5, which is the same day as our presidential primary. Mm-hmm. Okay, stock report.
So school choice, four and a half year DOJ probe comes to a close.
That's a federal DOJ.
No nicks, no negativity out of it, if you will. I mean, it's just a good thing to pull that back. Now, the program's not going to, you know, be without critics going forward. Dems still have their issues with it. There's still a great deal of tension in the Capitol about where our resources going for K-12 education. Will it be in the future toward our public system or more going toward the choice system? But for now, that was a good thing for them to just get that out of the way and off the table for them.
One last thing for the choice the choice backers to worry about.
Yes.
Mixed. Fetal tissue?
Fetal tissue. So
We've been
stuck on this for a while.
Yeah.
So new push this week from the anti-abortion groups, Wisconsin Family Action, Pro-Life Wisconsin, Wisconsin Right to Life, all announced.
Two of which are running ads, Green Bay and Milwaukee.
They're going to have a rally on Tuesday.
Yep.
Two, Wisconsin Family Action and Pro-Life Wisconsin are running ads in Green Bay and Milwaukee. Now, they are minuscule ad buys. I think it's $3,100 in Green Bay and a couple grand in Milwaukee. I mean, this is not, they're not heavy rotation. They actually got more attention on those ads because two Milwaukee stations don't want to air them during certain hours than they would have gotten otherwise. But they're putting a new press on lawmakers, especially Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, to bring the fetal tissue bill up for a vote. The problem is the dynamic hasn't changed. You still have folks who want the bill as is, which means there would be a ban on both experiments using fetal tissue and the sale of fetal tissue.
Yep.
You have folks on the other side of the spectrum going, and this is just the Republican caucus, saying, I'm not comfortable with the impact on research, especially UW system. This could impact our reputation with stem cell research nationally.
Right.
It could be impact us financially with the economy because it's a burgeoning industry. This has me worried. Oh, and by the way, you can write the ads of you voting against life-saving research for the fall election. So will they compromise and come to a resolution of what? You could, for example, federalize Wisconsin law. There's a ban already in federal law on profiting from the sale of fetal tissue. Just make that state law. But if you do that, the folks who are the true believers, they want the all or nothing approach, they won't be happy. Will they accept that? If they don't accept that, will nothing get done? That becomes a dynamic of who's going to blink, and oh, by the way, the clock is ticking. You know, we have 2 months left before they want to go home. They might get anything done.
The fetal tissue research ban clearly has more opposition among the Senate GOPers.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think these ads, and you're right, they're not large ad buys, do you think this at least gets a bill debated in the Assembly in the few remaining weeks left?
When we saw Robin Voss on Tuesday at the nominating commission, he said he'd had 5 phone calls, maybe 6, to his office since the ads started running. So he didn't seem worried by these. A side note, Pro-Life Wisconsin backed his primary opponent last time around, so I'm not sure he's in a big hurry to help Pro-Life Wisconsin on anything. But I think Robin, when you talk to him, he believes in and wants his caucus to make sure pro-life, Planned Parenthood, in his words, is not profiting off the sale of fetal tissue.
Yes.
That is clear that he believes in that. The experiment piece of it, that's where the concern is, and I'm not sure he can get the votes, or either house can get the votes to do something. And when you talk to Fitzgerald, he said last month, I interviewed him, that if they don't do something, there'll be people very unhappy about it, but what can you get done?
That's true. Okay, Falling, you have Mr. Jeff Plaley. I was going to list him as a separate topic, but let's talk about Mr. Plaley.
So, former Dem lawmaker, became railroad commissioner, not a bad gig, $90,000 plus a year, suddenly announces that he is going to pursue other opportunities a month after stories break about the light punishment he imposed on 2 employees who were having an extramarital affair in the office. Having sex in the office. In politics, exploring other opportunities is often shorthand for I was told to leave. Now, we will never know for sure. Plaley didn't answer phone calls this week to a cell phone or the office that I left. So we're not going to know for sure, but the speculation is rampant. And I do mean rampant in the building that he was pushed out. Like, look, this is not going to fly. Because for Governor Walker, he used that example of the Railroad Commission employees saying, look,
to justify
this is why
civil service reform.
We had this light punishment for 2 employees. We're doing something that is inappropriate. We couldn't fire them. We need to do something. Well, it turns out that one didn't have civil service protections anyway, was an at-will employee, so that kind of undercut that argument. And then, two, you find out they didn't really try anything anyway, or in terms of punishment. So doesn't look good. Interesting backstory, though, Plaley is he's known Walker since the days at Marquette.
Yep.
If you go back to 2010, he lost his primary to Chris Larson.
Yes.
Remember this? December 2010, he and Russ Decker
voted against
extending the union
negotiated union contracts.
That Doyle tried to push through the very last minute. That helped pave the way for Act 10, if you will, because it gave Walker the opportunity, if you will, to push Act 10 through and everything he did.
Yeah.
Plaley ended up in DOA not long after, I think sometime Marchish of 11, and then became commissioner in the fall. It was viewed at the time as a thank you, if you will, or a, hey, you're one of us now. You're giving you these jobs. $90,000 a year for a guy who has been a 19-year veteran of the Capitol, all of a sudden wants to pursue other opportunities, doesn't seem right on that surface.
And the PS on that is his term was not up for another year.
There are 6-year appointments. It wasn't up until March of next year.
March. Okay. Just one final note. The governor said this week that he would not pardon Stephen Avery. Here's my question, JR. Do you hear anything boiling in the Capitol in terms of legislation in the wake of the Netflix Making of a Murderer?
No, I remember. When you say that, I saw a picture on one website the other day of Mark Gundrum, former lawmaker, sitting next to Stephen Avery at a hearing. Because you remember back when Avery was cleared of the rape charge, he spent 18 years in prison for?
Yes.
There are all
kinds
of pictures
commit.
Of Gundrum and Jim Doyle by Avery. Because remember, they upped, I think, the payment you could receive for being wrongly convicted?
Restitution.
They all want those pictures to go away.
But I'm not hearing anything in the Capitol in terms of that.
No, I mean, there is a separate, not because of Avery, but there's been separate legislation to, again, up the payments you can receive for being wrongly convicted.
Yes, oh yeah, that's separate.
But it's not rid of him. And what's interesting about that case is that guy has caught, like, become a national phenomenon, if you will, because of this Netflix series. But back in the prosecutor, like, he is guilty as all get out. Like, what is going on?
Ken Kratz, a former prosecutor.
He's got his own baggage.
Separate from his
yes.
womanizing problem. Go ahead.
But it's a fascinating example of what social media can do and what a series on Netflix, where 5 years ago, where would that series have gone? Ten episodes, I think it was, in the series? Where would it have aired? How would you have gotten attention for it? Now it's out there and people are consuming it.
Very true, to the point where our governor says, no, I have no intention to pardon Stephen Avery because I don't pardon anybody.
Yeah, and also, he's exhausted all his appeals in the state. Everybody yeah. said no to him, so it's yeah, fascinating case of the attention he's received.
2016, bring it on, right, J.R.?
Yes.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 8th, correct?
Yes.
Thanks.